And welcome to ABW Radio. It's me again, your host, The Shredder, aka The Colonial Cannon, welcoming you. And today we have an esteemed panel of hipsters joining us right now. It's our good friend John Welsh, whose beard is less shitty than usual. How are you, John?
I'm very well. Thank you, Shreds, for the compliment on the beard. I had to shave it off and slowly begun regrowth on it. Dom has suggested some creams and oils for me to try and fill out the gaps because he keeps complaining about these sort of things. So I don't want to disappoint our Aussie friend. Hopefully the next version will be better for him.
I think that it's pretty hypocritical of a man who probably can't grow a beard in the first place to criticize a man who can grow any sort of a beard. So take that, Dom. Also joining us straight off the pirate ship, just docked into Plymouth and joined us here. It's our good friend, Chris Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter, how are you?
I'm good, Jace. Thank you for stepping in to be emergency. Well, not emergency, really. Just thanks for stepping in again. I was a little bit tied up. So thank you very much.
Glad to be here. Glad to be asked to do it. And glad that my second hosting job is after a win and not a second straight defeat. 2-0 today over a whole city. We'll start by just getting into some of the lineups. We still had a lot of injuries in midfield. Obviously, Santi's still out. Shaka's still suspended. Ramsey's still injured. Elneny came back from the AFCON after a disappointing loss, blowing a 1-0 lead in the final. He did score the one goal for Egypt, so that was nice. But we were still stuck with Oxcock in the middle of the pitch today. John, did you expect it to go any differently than last week? What were your initial thoughts when you saw those two, that pairing again and Elneny on the bench?
I wasn't massively surprised. I thought that's really our only options there in the middle at the moment. And I was a little bit surprised to see Elneny on the bench. I thought he did okay when he came on, because you never know. You know, he picked up, I think, a knock halfway through the tournament, and they weren't sure if he was going to play the final. So I wasn't sure on what his fitness would be like and travel time. Sometimes you get a bit of fatigue when exactly what day he's going to be back. So I thought that was fine. As for the rest of the lineup, a little bit disappointed to not see Perez starting again. I know they said he had a knock previously, but I'm not sure how much truth there was in that. And maybe it was just a bit of fiddling to cover some issues we've had with lack of players to help in centre mid. So I thought he could have started today, maybe over at Iwobi or Walcott, either one really. Other than that, I thought it was a pretty expected lineup. Nacho taken out for Gibbs. Yeah, I don't think Nacho's done too much wrong. Gibbs has looked okay at the moment. So for me, the only real disappointment was Perez not starting.
Let's brush on that, because I know Monreal Gibbs debate, Chris, has been something that's started to bubble up over the last couple months, as Monreal might not be looking as defensively solid as he has in the past. But I think a lot of people have said the same thing about Gibbs. Do you favor one over the other right now? Is it sort of a like-for-like swap at the moment with how they're playing? And is it just maybe Gibbs getting some more consistency? He's a bit younger than Monreal now. Do we think Gibbs is to the point where he's actually probably warranting starting over Monreal at this point?
No, not for me. No, I like Kieran Gibbs. I think he's, you know, he's a good solid pro, and he's, you know, he's been stayed with the club for a long time. I don't think it's any secret that we were prepared to let him go last summer and probably the summer before that. He is what he is. He's a backup left back. And I don't think he did anything particularly sort of wrong today. We'll probably come on to his foul later on, but no, he was solid. He had a hand in the goal, and that's what he's good at, getting forward. Nacho is good getting forward, but is also a very good defender. And I just don't think there's... I could see why he did it. I think the reason was because Kamil Grzycki was pegged to play down that side, and they threw a spanner in the works by putting him down the other side. And Hull do operate sort of quite with pace down each side. So I can see why he put Gibbs in. And also just to freshen it up a little bit. And I would have thought he had Bayern Munich in mind, because, you know, with Bellerin coming back in today, he wouldn't have wanted to have lost both fullbacks and risk an injury. So maybe a bit of that in mind. But yeah, Gibbo did all right. But, you know, he's good, but I just don't think he's not elite. He's not what you would class as an automatic starter at any point. I don't think, anyway, unless he gets a run of games, which I don't think he'll ever get.
Fair enough. Let's I do want to talk about Perez, because a lot's been made of it, especially in our WhatsApp group, because I know a lot of the people on the pod are big fans of him. I'm one of them. Our good friend Steve, Mr. Lord Hill Wood, as well. John, what does Perez need to do to get some starting time? If he's not going to play against the likes of, or not start against the likes of a team like Hull, who yes, they're playing very well, but they're still in the relegation battle and should be a team that we should turn over pretty easily. Obviously, it's not necessarily always the case, but what's he going to have to do to prove to Wenger that he probably does deserve some starting time over a guy like Iwobi who, yeah, we all know that he's got a lot of potential, but he's just not been as consistent lately.
I really don't know. It kind of stinks a little bit of when Joe Campbell was not being selected for a long period and people were asking for him to come in the team because the wide players at the time weren't really doing it. And he was, again, by no means a world-class player. And I don't think anyone was saying the same thing about Perez, but he shows work ethic. He shows he can get goals, shows he can link up well, you know, tracks back well, got a little bit of a nasty side about him as well. You know, puts in a little sly foul here and there when the ref's not looking. That kind of thing. Just stuff generally that the team's lacking a little bit at the moment. And also he's, he's not experienced at the very highest level, but he's an older player. So he's been around the game long enough and he knows what you're supposed to do in matches. It's not digging out Iwobi. I think Iwobi's great. I really like him. I think he's going to have a wonderful career. I think he's much better inside in the middle than he is out wide. But in some games, he doesn't do enough defensively tracking back. Today, I thought he was particularly poor. Again, I'm not complaining because he's a 19-year-old kid who's got a lot to learn. But we've got someone like Perez who, every time he's played, I don't think he's really had a bad game. He's got goals. He's got hat-trick in one game. You know, he's got assists. He looked like he linked up well with Alexis. We haven't really seen him play that much with Ozil yet, which I think would be really good to see. I like the way that Oxlade-Chamberlain's been playing centre-mid lately. And I think with the passing range that he's been showing there, someone like Perez can really benefit from it. So I just think sometimes you just need to mix things up a little bit because the team feels very stale at the moment. And even if it's not Iwobi and Wenger wants to keep him, and you know we know what he's like, he does have his favourite players. If he swaps out Theo Walcott, who, okay, is an experienced player, but we know does go missing. This season he's been better, at least at the start of the season, but he's got that downward trajectory that he tends to have into the second half of the season has all kind of come around now, then maybe it could be him instead. And I think there's just, in some games, you just look at it and just go, oh, if Lucas is on, maybe he would have made a different decision there. Maybe he would have taken the chance. You've seen how good his finishing is. And I can only think it is that Arsene isn't that keen on him as a player. I'm not sure how much of a, you know, how much it was a, not a desperate buy when we got him, but it was more of a, we've looked at him and he's very much a sort of third, fourth, fifth name down on the list. And it was kind of a, we're getting him in for as another body because we need cover in that area out wide.
Yeah, excuse me. It's sort of baffling me. He seems like a really efficient player. He doesn't have a lot of wasteful movement. He doesn't really waste a lot of touches. It seems like almost every shot he has is either just a foot or two wide, or it's on goal, or you know, saved or something. Chris, do you think that Wenger sees Perez more as a center forward, maybe to sort of play back up to Giroud and Sanchez? And that's probably why he hasn't started him maybe out wide, where I think, you know, he's played a couple of times and looked sharp. But do you think that Wenger sees his role more in the middle and he just can't get in there right now due to Sanchez?
I don't, mate, to be honest, because the few times he's played, other than the League Cup, he has played wide. So I actually think it's almost the reverse. I said this a few months ago when we signed him. We signed him as a number nine. We gave him the number nine shirt, and then we decided we were going to turn him into a winger, which is almost kind of the reverse, Wenger, if you will. Buy a winger and turn him into a striker. We've gone the opposite way. I've been openly sort of questionable about, you know, about him on here. I don't hide from that. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to go back on it. I think he's a very, very useful and talented squad player. And I think that is exactly what he is. I do question the reason why you buy a guy who's 28 and only play him occasionally. That does seem a little bit strange. You'd think a player of that age, you'd think, okay, if you buy him, even if we only bought him as a squad player for a season and a half, you'd think he'd play a bit more. But we don't see what happens in training, and maybe there's some link-up thing. We've touched on this pod and other pods in the past. It's all about partnerships. He does seem to link up with players very well. But maybe the manager doesn't fancy the partnerships with the fullback and him. Maybe it's not dynamic enough. Maybe he feels that he wanders out of position too much. Maybe he feels like he comes inside when he shouldn't, or goes outside when he shouldn't. So there's a variety of reasons. You know, I do like the guy. I think, as I say, he does work hard. I would much rather see him as a forward, as a centre forward, because I think he's better there. But he also does a very good job as a wide player, mainly, I think, because he knows what a centre forward wants in terms of service. He's fully aware, oh, what sort of ball would I want? That's the ball I'd want. Okay, that's the ball I'm going to put in. And I think for the goal in particular, the second goal, well, the penalty that led to, you saw his composure in that he didn't just thrash at it. He took his time and put the ball back into a dangerous area. So, yeah, he's a very talented player. I'm not really comfortable with the second coming of Jesus element that some of our fans have about him, to be honest. But, you know, he's a very useful squad player. And I think if he... I'll finish with this. The key thing with him is if you put him into... If you look at our rivals, so you look at Man City, Man United, Chelsea, and Spurs aren't really our rivals, Liverpool, would he walk into any of their starting 11s? And I think probably only Liverpool would he walk into their starting lineup, and Liverpool are probably the worst of those three teams. So I think that says it all. So yeah, good addition, but I don't particularly think that there's a reason why he's not starting, other than the fact, like you say, the manager doesn't really fancy him at the moment.
Interesting the way some of those players, Campbell, Perez, that Wenger sort of treats like that. Let's. I want to talk briefly just about, this could have easily been a trap game for us, but before kickoff, you know, there's a lot of negativity surrounding the club and the manager situation and the Ozil Sanchez off in the summer sort of debate here. So I wanted to, Hull though, changed their manager, brought in a bunch of players, had five lone players in the starting lineup today, which is the maximum allowed by the Premier League. Come in with some momentum, some really good matches underneath their belt, picking up some big points. I know last weekend against Liverpool, sort of they were riding high coming into this game, and we were coming into this game in at the bottom of a sort of a swell, and it could have easily really turned because it seemed like they sort of had all the momentum. Chris, I'm going to come back to you on this one. Do you think that sort of our recent performances had any bearing on really how we played? Because I do also think we came in looking disinterested after last week, which is really disheartening to think as a fan that you lose a match to the team that's on top of the league by 9 points, essentially sort of take yourself out of the title race, and now your players can't come up for a game against a team that they know is going to put up a fight. Are you worried about that mindset? Because it's sort of the way it felt coming into this match.
I'm not. I mean, I suppose I am. If that carried on, or if that was clearly the case moving forwards, I would be. But I don't think today, I didn't really feel that was the case. I just felt like it was the classic. I can't remember too many early kickoffs with any teams that are fast-paced, all action. You know, I thought today that it was quite end-to-end, to be fair, for periods of the game, but it also was quite dull. And I think you get that atmosphere in the ground, the supporters, you know, a lot of people go out the night before, they're feeling a little bit rough the next day. And I think the atmosphere tends to seep into the way the players perform. And that's not to excuse the players in any way, shape or form, but I think it's only natural. Think of it as if you go out to meet a few mates at a bar, you know, if everybody's up for it and everybody's feeling great, you have a great night. If you rock up and everyone's a bit, oh, long week at work, oh, can't be bothered, you tend to just sort of go home at 10 o'clock. John doesn't, he stays up till 4, but maybe not now, he used to. But, you know, I think it's one of those things, it's indicative of the way things go. And the week we've had as supporters, you know, all the guff that's going on around, you know, the manager and all that, I suppose it does take its toll. I think Kieran Gibbs said something interesting in the post-match interview, and they did obviously question the idea about the manager speculation and all that. And he just said, I think the word he used was, we don't get involved in the politics, which I thought was a very interesting and carefully chosen word, in that I don't think the players really get that too heavily involved, unless you're Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain with Twitter. I joke, but no, I don't. I think it's just one of those things. A morning kickoff against a side that you know are probably, although Hull have been good, and I'm a big fan of Marco Silva, and was ever since they turned us over with Olympiacos. But yeah, I think they came with a game plan. If they could get a goal early, great. They'd sit on it. If they couldn't, they'd stay in the game for as long as they could, and then try and get us late on. And they nearly did, to be fair to them. So yeah, there was a lot of nerves in the game. And to be honest, I'm sure John will agree with this, I'm just quite glad for it to be over, and we can just put this horrible week behind us, really.
Yeah, John, your thoughts sort of leading in. Did you have any reservations about today? I know Chris had sort of predicted a draw on the podcast on Thursday, but did you think we would win this easily, or did you think it could end up going sideways for us?
No, I actually predicted a draw as well. Although I think Danny said that I've done it late, so he's probably going to try and cheat me. Although it doesn't really matter because I didn't get any points because we won, obviously, which is much better. But yeah, no, because Hull have been in decent form. They've got the new manager bounce. Marco Silva looks like he's got them organised. They've got in some decent players. You know, it's the argument of, I'm not being entitled by saying we should beat Hull, but we should beat Hull. I don't think that's an unfair thing to say. Yes, you have to go out and do it, and you have to be tactically secure, and you know, they're scrapping for their lives at the bottom, so they might, that kind of thing. But you know, after 10, 15 minutes of maybe battling for the ball for a bit, we've got enough quality that we should beat them. And we did today. We got the win. I don't think we were superb, but I wasn't comfortable coming into the game at all because we've been on such a bad run. And we know that it's from previous seasons, it takes us a while to get out of that sort of slump that we can go through, and sometimes it's, you know, we'll lose a few and then we'll get a draw, maybe two draws, and then finally get a win. And also because we've got the Bayern Munich game coming up, I was worried that maybe the players might be focusing on that a little bit, be slightly distracted. There was the possibility for rotation in the team a little bit, maybe he was going to rest some players before that game, so it all affects the mindset. And the whole team are going to come there, you know, on a good run of form. Apparently, the players are all loving training now, really enjoying it. They really like the new manager, everything he's brought in. And they're going to come in thinking, you know, this Arsenal team are vulnerable right now. We can really attack them and have a go at them. And you saw at the start of the game, they were pressuring us quite high up the pitch, which we've seen a few teams do this season, which you don't normally get at the Emirates. Generally, teams tend to sit back and sit deep and try and soak up pressure. And obviously, as the game went on, that's what they did. But they were pushing us quite high up and were trying to be as adventurous and pushing forward a lot more than you might expect. So they obviously sense that vulnerability, and you could feel it in the crowd as well. Fans went there today, and fair play to everyone who went, because it's miserable weather at the moment. It's an early kickoff. People are, you know, you might have gone out the night before, it's hungover, and it's against Hull. It's not the most exciting game in the world to go to either. You know, it costs money, all those kind of things. And you've had a shit week. And it's like, do I really want to go and watch Arsenal now? But fair play to all the fans who went. I know there were some empty seats today. That can happen. But, you know, they went there and you could see they were nervous. And even after we got the first goal, there was still a little bit of edginess in the stadium and everything. It would have been nicer if we got the second goal a little bit earlier in the game rather than right at the end, just to cheer everyone up a little bit. But, you know, you could see the fans left a little bit happier. And I think it's that kind of sigh of relief. We've got the game out of the way. We've got the 3 points again. Okay, Bayern Munich is a different thing, but it's in the Champions League. It's not in the Premier League. It's a different competition. It's a totally different animal. So you can kind of not relax, but it's just sort of that horrible feeling we've all had over the past sort of week and a half. It's kind of drained away a bit now. And hopefully all the conversations about the manager and everything else that's been going on in the press, which I don't mind having a conversation about the manager and whether he should go on or not, that's fine. But it's the way it's been done and the way not just the manager, but the club and the fans have been attacked as well. You know, fans have been really insulted by some people, like idiots like Craig Burley and stuff. And obviously Steve talks about it brilliantly on this week's pod. So it's just trying to get all of that out of the way from today's game, and just getting the 3 points was the biggest thing.
John made some good points there. Just one thing I wanted to highlight on what you said. He's bang on. It had the feel of one of those games that if we'd have conceded late and it had gone, you know, 1-1, it would have been absolutely toxic. However, yeah. we got the late goal and everyone sort of left, and it was almost like polite applause, a doff of the cap, and on to the weekend we go. There was no jubilant street parties. Yeah. It was just like, well, we should be winning this game, so, you know, let's carry on. It was one of those, but had it gone the other way, I think I'd have just buried my head in the sand and run away for life, because I just couldn't be bothered to talk about it if we had it done.
I wonder how many banners were tucked back away whenever we got that penalty late in the game there to sort of seal the deal. I'm gonna skip over that thought that I just had. Let's go ahead and move on to the actual game itself. Come on to the goals in just a second, but you know, both of you mentioned it was a pretty open game. We had some real chances, and I think they had some chances as well. And as much as some players went missing today, I know, you know, Walcott's come under some heat, but he actually had a really good layoff there for Hector to hit the side netting early on. You know, Ozil had a really early chance early on. John, why does Ozil always wait for a defender to step right in front of him before he shoots? Can you explain that to me?
I really don't know. I love Meza. He's a very clever player, and his passing is superb. I don't think he had his best game today, but his shooting is at times is dreadful. I mean, you look at the goal at Ludogorets, and it's like, this thing of beauty. And, you know, it was bad defending from Ludogorets, but, you know, you can only score what's in front of you, and he flicks it over the one guy, you know, puts the other guy on his ass, puts the keeper on his ass, taps it in. It's like, oh, beautiful. But just other times, you just like, just hit the ball. You've got the technique. Just imagine where, you know, that top corner is a player's foot you've got to pass to. Like, put that image in your head. There's a guy standing there, and just do it. Because if it's a player's foot, I know you can put the ball there perfectly. But if it's a goal, for some reason, you can't do it. And I think that kind of waiting for the defender thing is because he's used to doing it when he's passing, because he waits to the very last moment so he can see it makes the most space and best opportunity. And yeah, it was frustrating today because the front four, especially like you said before the goal we scored, like Sanchez had a great chance that he put wide, any of the day expected to score. Ozil had a good chance. Iwobi was clean through, could have slipped in Walcott on the right, went out to the left, and Ozil wasted that one. Iwobi could have taken the shot himself. Bellerin had a good shot that if he was a bit more composed, he would at least hit the target. You know, the keeper was covering the near side, so maybe the keeper makes the save there. But when you get presented that many opportunities, you know, thankfully it's against Hull and we got more opportunities, we're going to score. Yeah. If you perform like that against, say, Bayern Munich, for example, you might not get that many opportunities and you really have to take them because, you know, if they get presented theirs, odds on, they're probably going to score them. You know, I was worried about how open we were at the back. Koscielny got done a few times today, which was really, really worrying. You know, thankfully, the whole players aren't of the perhaps intelligence or aren't got all the understanding yet. It's probably a fairer way to put it between them, you know, to run into the box to take. So sort of, there was like an easy 4-yard tap in at one point where Koz got done by, what's that kid called? Markovic.
Yeah.
You know, who I don't think is that amazing a player, but got a run on us and got behind the back four a couple of times today. So it wasn't, it surprised me how stretched the game was in the first sort of 20 minutes. It looked more like the last 10 minutes of a football game than the opening 20, which is worrying when there's huge gaps between the defence and midfield and stuff like that. So not comfortable at all. But the fact that we're actually making chances, which I don't think we were in previous games, really, is the one good thing. There was, you know, I still think the movement up front was a bit wrong and it wasn't all there, but to be actually being able to open up a team again was nice. Although it's got to be said, we were helped a lot by, I'm not sure, did Tom Huddleston seriously used to play for Spurs? Because I swear he must have actually been. He must be an Arsenal fan because the amount of times he passed us the ball in front of their box is unbelievable today. He was like willing us to score. He gave it away so many times. It was unreal. And when you're playing against, you know, Andrea Ranocchia, who used to be at Inter, God bless him. Oh, dear. He is not a good defender at all. And we made him look quite good today, which is worrying. So I'm just pleased we got the win. But, yeah, just so many chances we should have taken. We could have had like 3-4 goals quite comfortably.
Chris,
I was just going to say, half time in Germany, by the way, it's Ingolstadt 0, Bayern Munich 0. So, also, RB Leipzig losing at home to Hamburg. Carry on.
We'll come on to Bayern a little later. Let me, Chris, I want to come to you about some of the, John sort of was talking about our chances. They had some chances, and we've seen some more, let me to use Kieran Gibbs' term. What's the political way to put this? We've seen some major fuck ups from pretty much our back six or seven this year. And in this game, it seemed extremely open. You know, Iwobi got dispossessed and we let a player run for about 60 yards on us. You know, Koscielny got scared. Do you think it's the lack of protection in front of the back four that's leaving our defenders too exposed? Or do you think it's more individual errors and poor decision making from our sort of center backs that's seeing some of these chances more recently come about more frequently?
It's probably a little bit of both. The big issue I have, particularly with our central midfield at the moment, is there's been so much chopping and changing. For the last, well, forever really, since Antony got injured. It seems to have been 1 week it's Xhaka and Cock, then it's Cock and Ox, then it's El Nene and Xhaka, then it's Ramsey and Xhaka. It's just all been, you know, really, really confused, and there's been no consistent partnership. And I think, obviously, we've talked about the lack of creativity and the lack of a partnership when Santi's gone, but we've also haven't found another partnership in what we've played since. You know, for me, Ramsey and Xhaka doesn't work. Coquelin doesn't work with anyone but Santi unless he's played deep. El Nene, I don't think people give him anywhere near as much credit as he should. I think he's a very, very good footballer. He's very tidy. Yes, he does the simple things well, but he's very, very disciplined in his positioning and tracking of runs. I think he's very, very good at that. And he offers us that transition into play. You know, he turns defence to attack quite well in a different way to Santi, but in the same sort of mindset. You know, he moves us on quickly. Yeah, I just think that partnership is a big thing. And when we're trying to almost fudge it, you know, we're playing. I actually thought Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was one of our better performers today, and he was against Chelsea. And I think fair play to the lads. You know, people whinge on this podcast, on our podcast, on lots of podcasts about the fact that when players are given an opportunity, they don't take it. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain's taken this chance, and I think he deserves to stay in that position. And I'd like to see him stay in that position for Tuesday. Is he the finished article? No. Is he as good as Santi doing that role? Not yet. But has he got potential to turn into somebody who could play that role week in, week out? I think he has. And, you know, I know this is going to upset some people, but I think he's done more in two games than Ramsey and Coquelin have done in 6-7 weeks. So, you know, I think the partnership's key. And until we get a settled team, or until we get a settled group of players in that holding two position, if that's what we're going to play moving forwards, then we're always going to feel a little bit fractured, and it's always going to be a little bit scratching around to find the right formation, and that affects, as you said rightfully there, the centre backs. You know, if the centre backs don't really know who's playing in front of them, they don't necessarily know exactly the combination that's in front, then it doesn't help. And winning teams generally have continuity, same 11 most weeks without injuries, you know, and I think we've really struggled with that in recent weeks, and that's what's gonna sort of hamper us a little bit until we can get a regular two in there.
Well stated. Let's talk about the goal here. Sanchez in the 34th there, right place at the right time to lend us all puns intended a helping hand. So let's talk about that, John. It reminds me of a very sort of classic poacher's goal where, you know, you got the ball in the box and you just start sort of running from the penalty spot to the keeper and good things will happen. Your thoughts on the goal and you know, at that point, did we really deserve it?
I thought we'd created enough chances to definitely get a goal, whether we deserved it or not. Yes, I suppose. I thought we were marginally the better team. I thought Hull were, you know, they weren't bad going forward either, but they were giving away so many chances at the back and making so many sloppy errors that we're bound to take one eventually. We were very fortunate how we got it. the commentary, I wasn't watching on Sky. I had I think I was watching for an American feed, and they were saying that the PGMOL representative said that it was ball to hand and that it was a perfectly legal goal and there was nothing wrong with it, that Sanchez wasn't doing anything wrong. And I don't disagree. I thought it was a fine goal. There's not a lot he can do with it. The only thing I thought was there was a possibility of it being disallowed because his hand was in a what you would call an unnatural position because it was up high. But there was no intent or anything like that. So I think the goal stands fine. Apparently, now I don't know how true this is, but there is a rumor going round that who was the referee? Clattenburg.
Yep.
Apparently apologized to Hull and saw the goal at half time and said it should have been a handball, which, according to the guy from the, you know, the leagues, the referees sort of association, said it was perfectly legal. So now whether that's true or not, I don't know, because there's no direct quotes and you never get quotes from referees because it's against the rules. They're not allowed to discuss things, matters like that after the game. So I don't know how true that is. And I agree. I think it's good that referees can't, because, you know, they can get themselves in all sorts of trouble then, and everything gets open to interpretation and, you know, is this ref biased against this team and all that kind of stuff. So element of luck, but I think it's that kind of thing where, because we're in such a rut, sometimes you just need a scrappy goal. And it's just one of those, if it goes in off his arse, just get the goal. Sanchez, you could see, was frustrated. I don't think it was a very good game for him either. I thought he was pretty poor, to be honest, for the majority of the game. But it's one of those things where he needed that little confidence boost. The team needed it. You could see how happy everyone was and, like, sort of the relief, the team all celebrating together. You know, they were happy for him as well, because there's obviously, I think, the other players in the team understand that, yes, he is a selfish player and he wants the glory and he wants the team to win, certainly, but he wants it for himself as well. So they know how important goals are for him. So it was just kind of that, lit it out a little bit. Like we were talking about fans as well, the same kind of thing, where the team needed just any way for the goal to go in. So element of luck, but yeah, I don't think there was anything wrong with the goal at all.
Yeah, Chris, your opinions on it. Would you have given handball? John, I was watching the you did have the American feed. That's we had the exact same thing said and stated that, you know, it was the right call and hand to ball, and especially if it's a goal and the official doesn't have a clear view, he'll check with his linesman. If the linesman doesn't say anything, you're good. It's a goal, and that's what happened. Any differing opinions there, Chris? Thoughts on Sanchez's sort of performance as well? I know, you know, getting a goal doesn't always necessarily mean you play well, Theo Walcott. But, it took us a while. Did you sigh, or did you sort of sit back and say, all right, now we have to go on and continue?
Yeah, the latter, to be honest. I thought the goal would actually create more chances for us. I thought it would open them up more. And what it actually did was we sort of accepted that, went, okay, that'll do till half time. And then second half, we came out and basically said, right, for 20 minutes, we're just going to defend and then hopefully get a second, which is not ideal. Yeah, I think, I mean, Hull, as you said earlier on, missed some good chances. And I suppose there was an element of a bit of relief going ahead, just because you could only have imagined what the atmosphere would have been like and how the players would have reacted had we gone behind. So it was a little bit of a relief. I mean, as for the goal itself, fair play to Kieran Gibbs getting down that byline. I think Mezut sort of, as you rightly said, earlier on seemed to delay that little bit too long in pulling the ball back, and it was deflected up. And I don't think Gibbo's shot was going in. I think it would have probably been cleared. Well, obviously it was cleared into Sanchez, but it was good reaction for Alexis, and he nipped in and put it away. He didn't have the best game. I think you're absolutely right. I thought the celebration was interesting. Both celebrations, in fact. One, there was some clear badge patting. I don't know if there's anything in that. I don't really read into these things too much, but I'm sure some people will have a massive fanny flap about it. But he looked like, I think John touched on it, he looked like a man who was quite relieved to get back on the score sheet. And it did look a bit like, oh, thank God I've got a goal. He's almost trying to play himself back into form. And that's one criticism I would have of Mezut at the moment. Obviously, they're the two players in the spotlight at the moment with the contracts. Mesut doesn't strike me as a guy who can play himself back into form. He strikes me as a guy who just needs to almost be taken out the firing line, given a cuddle, and then come back in and go again. And I wonder if, like, I think we've got an international break coming up soon, haven't we? I wonder if that's going to be the time where he's sort of protected a little bit and given that time off and go away with Germany and rebuild that confidence. Or he might rock up on Tuesday and have an absolutely brilliant game in Germany and prove everyone wrong. But he looks like a man at the moment who's really struggling to find any sort of confidence. He isn't shooting. Was he got 9 goals this season, hasn't he, from midfield? And they were all at the start of the season when he was getting goals. Now he looks absolutely petrified every time the ball comes near him. And something I picked up on, and I know some people won't agree with this, but I picked up on this. When you play, you'll probably appreciate this, John, when you play Sunday League football, if you don't like heading the ball or getting in physically where it hurts, and trust me, I didn't. When the goalkeeper is about to kick a ball long, goal kick long, when you're an offensive player, you tend to do that thing where you look and you point to the goalkeeper, go over there, give it to someone else. Mesut did that on 4 occasions, I noticed, in the second half alone, where Petr Cech had the ball and he was clearly saying, go to Alexis, point, because I don't think he wants to go into the physical challenges at the moment. And that's not to have a go at him. It's not the sort of player he is, you know. That isn't the sort of player he is. He's not the physical specimen. He's not the, you know, Bobby Pirès was exactly the same. You know, he could mix it, mind, but he wasn't the player that would be going up for rattling headers. And I wonder if Beza almost needs to be that player that, as I say, he needs to be in form to give a good performance. And if he's not in form, he doesn't. And he might as well not be there. And he's never going to be dropped. John made a point in our WhatsApp group. You know, he is Arsenal's favourite and he will play. And rightly so, because he's a world-class player and he can change a game in a second. But, yeah, both him and Alexis have struggled recently, you know, in terms of confidence. And it was good to see Alexis get the goal. And just on the goal, we got an exclusive come in from Hull, actually. Their reaction, I don't know if you saw their interview post-match when they were talking about the handball. It went something like this. I don't know if you can hear this. That was roughly what was said after the game. So, you know, sorry, Hull. Tough shit. I mean, it hits him, for Christ's sake. It's not handball. If it's given against us, of course, it is handball. But no, joking aside, you know, it's one of those that it just hit him and it went into the net. So you get some, you don't get some. So maybe that balanced out last week's foul or not foul at Stamford Bridge. So we'll take a bit of luck. We can get it.
Yes, absolutely. So we went into halftime 1-0. My note at halftime. Halftime. Good to have a lead. That was pretty much that pretty much summed up the first half. Okay. Second half, I have like 4 notes, and they're all about it not being exciting, and pretty stinking boring. Because let's be honest, it was just a lot of fouls both ways, a lot of sloppy play. It just our players went missing for sort of periods there. I don't want to get too far into it, because I do want us to chat a little with an eye on Bayern here. But let's finish this off. Second half, guys. Chris, I'm going to come back to you on this. Just your overall thoughts, and we'll come to the penalty in just a second. But leading up to that sort of that sequence, I found myself doing chores. What about you during the second half there?
Yeah, it was a bit, wasn't it? It was a little bit. It was a bit of a snooze fest. Yeah, I mean, I much like John and yourself said pre-game, it wasn't the most enthralling game of football. It wasn't the worst, I have to say. Like, it wasn't true, a terrible true. Game, but it was a little bit dull.
It was great from our point of view, at least. It was probably exciting to watch if you're a Hull fan, because I thought they were much better than us second half, to be honest.
Yeah, for a lot of it. Agreed. And again, I know we've said this 1,000 times, but we'll keep saying it. You know, the atmosphere, everything was just like, oh, you know, you could almost hear Arsene Wenger's arse going halfway through that second half. You know, it's just it was one of those where nobody was sitting comfortably in their chairs. I didn't do chores. I was busy. I was watching on the go, so I was out and about doing things in town at the same time. So I had to sort of watch on the move, which is never ideal because your stream comes and goes and all that jazz, which is really annoying. But no, it just struck me as one of those games there. Again, you just wanted to get it over with. And I think you touched on the buying game. It doesn't matter how quote-unquote professional a player is. They have to be, with 20 minutes to go, even half hour to go, 1-0 up against a side that are offering not a huge amount other than a few breaks. There must be a little bit of the mindset that thinks, you know what, let's just keep the ball for 10 minutes. Let's just take the legs out, you know, put the feet up a little bit. And I'm not saying you should. You know, I don't think you should. I think you should go 100, you know, 100 minutes or whatever, a full game in 95 minutes at full pace and try and put the game away. And arguably, if we were 3-0 up at halftime, that's the time to put your feet up second half. But it, as the second goal didn't seem to be arriving, it almost looked like the players had a bit of an eye on Tuesday. That's not ideal, but I suppose it's only natural. And now we sort of look ahead to that game, and we said it again today, but it's just that kind of puff out the cheeks and sag the shoulders and go, okay, that's that one done then. And as you say, back to the hoovering. So yeah, wasn't the best, but happy to take the points at the end of the day.
Yeah, John, your thoughts on the second half nap time?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't enjoy the second half particularly. We weren't great. I thought we could have made some subs earlier on in the game, but that's, you know, Arsene has his time when he makes his substitutes. That's kind of the thing. I thought when Coquelin went down and it looked like he'd done some sort of strain, whether it was his groin or thigh or whatever it was, then there's an argument then he could have brought on Elneny straight away then, just to maybe give a bit more energy in midfield, because I thought, although Hull didn't make loads of chances, they were getting a lot of the ball and they were having a lot of possession at times. They weren't doing much with it, to be fair, but you know, they were getting the ball and I think is it in DA? I've got no idea who the
guy is. Number 10.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he was coming into the middle a bit and sort of getting on the ball a bit more. Again, not doing loads with it, but we were just losing the ball in sloppy areas. And I just thought freshen it up a little bit and exploit some of the mistakes that Hull were making as well, because they were still making mistakes at the back. So I thought there was an argument for bringing on Perez and Welbeck a bit earlier. Again, maybe he's saving some of that sort of energy back, like with Welbeck in particular, because obviously the injury and how long he's been out. Maybe he's trying to keep him fresh for the buy-in game, because I think he's certainly someone I'd consider starting for that. Just not a great... I just thought the tempo dropped off. There wasn't enough of a buzz. In the games where we've been losing in the previous matches, second half we've come out and started them very quickly and moved the ball really fast and stuff. And there wasn't that same kick in the team. And I don't know whether it's a case of, because they were a goal up, they felt a little bit more comfortable when they start thinking about the buying game, like Chris said. Maybe that's got in their mindset. Or are they nervous and they don't want to push too far forward and leak a goal at the back, that kind of thing, because Hull had got in once or twice behind them. So I think it was still just being very tentative and we don't want to push too much. And you could see the frustration, because you could see Ozil and Sanchez were still pushing forward and trying to get the perfect pass and everything else, and it wasn't always coming off for them or in the ball quick enough, or what they'd done quick enough. So, I mean, it was just general frustration around the whole team. And it was, you know, if maybe you make those changes, you get a little bit more. I've got to say, I know we'll come on to individuals, but I thought the Ox was brilliant all game today. I really, really like how he's been playing in the middle. His like sort of final position where he ends up. There was a brilliant bit in the second half where he beat, I don't know, three or four players. Took it down the left-hand side. He'd won the ball back in our box and sort of carried it all the way to Hull's box. And it was fantastic. Great run, and laid it off, and the opportunity was sort of wasted. And I think it was certain players at the moment have got confidence and can do things and make things happen, and others just haven't. And there's too few in our team at the moment that have got that ability and belief about them. And I think some of them are sort of kind of doubting themselves a little bit. And maybe the win today kind of brings that back in. A bit more into the team. You know, having Elneny and another option in midfield helps. Maybe Perez does get a start, Welbeck starting, all that kind of, just get the good atmosphere back in a club, because that's what's been missing the last couple of weeks.
Let's talk about, I mentioned it was quite foully. Chris, Gibbs. Some rashness, especially with a card. What your thoughts?
My thoughts, objectively, he's a lucky boy. It's quite funny, isn't it? Because a lot of Arsenal fans have said in the past that they wish, particularly if you go back to last weekend, and I don't want to, but the Coquelin incident with Hazard, and people saying, oh, he's just got a foul in there, he's just got to chop him down. Ironically, Gibbs does it, so that everyone's going, what's he doing? He's a mug. So it's funny, isn't it? But no, I mean, he said in his interview, he's very honest, he took a chance. Martin Klatenberg clearly gave the decision because Markovic was heading away for goal. Speaking of Markovic, Jamie Redknapp described, I think it was Jamie Redknapp. Was it Jamie Redknapp on Sky? Anyway, if it wasn't, somebody will correct me. Somebody in the Sky channel described him as a, quote, match winner. I howled when I heard that. I howled. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, he obviously was away with a good touch, and it did look like, without the benefit of Kieran Gibbs shoving him in the back, he probably would have had a more, a more careful touch on, and he probably was there on goal. It was a very good foul to give away. It was the right thing to do. In the circumstances, you've got to take a chance. And even if you get sent off, arguably, you say, well, at least you stopped the goal and you reorganize. Yeah. I think maybe Gibbs's reputation is what maybe saved him a little bit. I wonder if that was Koscielny, Mustafi or Xhaka in that position, I wonder if they'd have stayed on. Not so sure. But clearly, the Klatenberg felt that the ball was going wider rather than straight through on goal. But I think if that ball is at the other end and it's a whole player, I think we're livid that they're not sent off. And I can see why they would be slightly taken aback with that decision. But fair play to Gibbo. As I said, he made a split-second decision. He felt he had to make the challenge, and he did. The one thing I would have to say, though, why are our two centre-backs going up for the same ball that creates that problem in the first place? Because that was route 101 or room 101 defending, wasn't it? It's just like, why on earth is no communication there? I get why Kos tries to clean everything out, but why Mustafi's jumping at the same time? I don't know. So that's a communication issue. So that's another issue aside. But once that had happened, I think Gibbo did the right thing. And I hold my hands up. I think we got away with one a bit there.
Can I just say on that, I'm glad Gibbs got away with it. But I actually think he did the wrong thing. Don't get me wrong, I'm calling for our players to foul people much more. There was a few complaints from some of our fans about all the whole players surrounding the referee and moaning and stuff. I don't particularly like it, but there's plenty of games where I'd love our entire team to surround the referee and make him go, oh, hang on a minute, I better give a decision. All right, red card then. Make him change his mind. Not nice, but there's football, it's modern day. I personally think the ball was going away and Gibbs should have just shown him down the line and forced him wide because he was the last man. He took a risk, got away with it, so a bit lucky, and I'm pleased he did get away with it. I'm not digging Gibbs out for it at all because I'm glad that in the end that he did it because, to be honest, Markovic is a bit shit. I don't think he would have scored. But, I think in a footballing sense, it wasn't the right call, but... if there was another defender behind him, just wipe him out. I couldn't give a shit. That's fine. But yeah, I think Chris is right about the reputation, maybe. Maybe because he's English as well. Not saying referees are racist and that they hate foreign players or anything like that. But generally, players who have played for England or represented at some point get an easier time in the Premier League.
So he didn't send him off, but if it was a clear red, he probably would have sent off Ox instead of Gibbs instead, is what you're saying.
Well, that as well, obviously, I think that's why Oxlade Chamberlain has dyed his hair, that sort of different colour at the top to make sure referees can differentiate between them.
Yeah. And we all know that the cause of all this outward racism was indeed Danny. So, it's all down to Danny that this podcast is blatantly racist. So, Danny, there you go.
It was funny hearing on the pod. If you haven't taken a listen to it, you really should. Again, Steve's rant at about 48 minutes in is definitely worth listening to over and over again there. But I
also worth listening to if you like the Lone Watch because Danny does it on his own.
That was
hilarious, but also because he's lost a tooth this week. You might have put it on Twitter. And there's certain letters that he can't say very well. And Danny can't speak great at the best of times.
Without Chris or Gimli there to correct the pronunciation, it's definitely entertaining. So definitely check the pod. It's definitely and our good friend who's joining us today, Mr. Welsh, gets quite a few mentions. A lot of subtle digs. Subtle digs.
A lot of crap. There.
Yeah.
John's the L Nanny of ABW.
Lots of John's going to open a seafood restaurant at some point. let's move on to the let's talk about this an incident where Theo Walcott did turn up for a bit today, and he did look like he cared, and he should have because McGuire went in like a bully at a pub and just pushed him, and I probably would have done the same thing. Especially against a guy who's pretty much twice my size and, can probably easily injure me. At least he turned up for something because it looked like for a second, especially when he threw the ball, and I'm not saying he threw it at the linesman, but he definitely threw it near the linesman. John, your thoughts on future Peaky Blinder Theo Walcott.
Oh dear. Yeah, that was funny. I think that the frustration came from Oxlade-Chamberlain was clearly being fouled, and Clattenburg did the right thing. He played advantage, yeah. And we got the advantage from it. And I was like, great, he's made a good decision. I can't remember if he went back and booked the player or not. I hope he did.
He did not.
Oh, he did. Well, okay. Well, that's not good. But he played the advantage. That bit he got right. So Theo's seen that, and then he's gone in with a tussle with Maguire. Was it a foul? Yeah. I think it's more he's just bigger. Yeah, he did push him a little bit. The throwing the ball away, I don't know if he threw it at the lino or not, because you can never tell with Theo, because was it a shot? Was it a pass? Was it a cross? You don't know. He's using his hands instead, so... Yeah. No, I'm joking. That's really mean. You know, he's throwing the ball away in frustration, which is stupid. Yeah. You shouldn't do that. Having a row with Maguire, yeah, that's fine. I've got absolutely no problem with that at all. He didn't headbutt him. He didn't, swing a fist or anything stupid like that. He just got face to face with him, and he's a big old lump, Maguire. And to be fair, he would have sparked Theo out, sent him to the outside of the pitch if he'd swung. But fair play to him, he fronted up, and it wasn't just about Maguire. He was clearly saying to Clattenburg, look what's happened to my teammate, and trying to stick up for Oxlade-Chamberlain. That's wonderful. I'd like to see more players do that. I think we've seen it. We've complained for years that we haven't had those type of players. And don't get me wrong, Theo Walcott is not that kind of player generally. That's why I liked it when we signed Xhaka, because he's got a bit of ag about him and he'll stick the boot in. Now, you get the other side of that is where you'll get sent off and you get a bad reputation. But you've got to take – but if you want it, you're going to have to take the other side of it as well. So that comes with it. So, yeah, it was just amusing to see, this tiny little – I mean, in comparison to Maguire, he looks like a midget. If Theo Walcott stood next to me, he probably looks like a muscle man because, how fit and healthy footballers are and whatever. But, yeah, it was just hilarious because it's like David and Goliath. Just that
he's like that looking up at him.
So funny. He's probably got about 10 stone on him, Maguire, as well.
My other favorite part was when I Weigh 10 Huddlestones came over and Theo just looked at him and go, just look at him, it's like, you Spursy twat, get out of here. That was my other favorite part of that. Now, let's actually not to get too caught up on that. Let's talk about their handball, which clearly was a hand to ball. And Sanchez, did you have any fear in your mind that Sanchez may try to be a little too cheeky and end up trying to chip and it not coming off, or what was your confidence level in our Alexis taking another penalty?
Well, as luck would have it, just as I walked into the house, my stream cut as he ran up to the ball. So that was good. No, I mean, penalties, yeah, I'm never really 100% confident just because I've seen so many bad ones over the years. But no, I mean, it was obviously a clear penalty. I actually genuinely felt for the kid a little bit at first, because it was one of those where you clearly, you know it's coming, and you just lose your body and your arm goes up. And yeah, you just for a split second, you lose all sense of where you are and you just try and stop the ball going in. Yeah. Ironically, I'm not even sure the header would actually have had enough power to go in. It was sort of a bit of a trickler, but no, I mean, it wasn't the best penalty even then, really, was it? But, you know, he got it over the line.
Yeah.
And then obviously you saw Arsene go, thank you, that'll do. And off he went to the dressing room. So, yeah, I'm never really 100% confident on penalties. What I would say is I'm more confident with Giroud in front of them than Alexis. Yeah. He's always been quite a good penalty taker. But no, I mean, Alexis always wants to score the goals, doesn't he? And fair play. Got me some dream team points, so I'll take it. But yeah, he obviously wants to score. I think that goal made him top scorer in the Premier League at the moment as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just ahead of Romelu Ford-Kaku, so that's good. Good
guy.
Good.
You know, that guy you said can't score enough goals.
Yeah,
moving
who did
on.
He score against?
Who did Sanchez score against?
Oi. Yeah.
All right. All right. You can only put him away with what's in front of you there. So let's. First off, everybody in the chat, one, thanks for watching. We really appreciate it. Nice to be on. After a good 3 points here, put your questions in the chat box, and we'll start to get to those as well. I want to discuss one more thing about the game today, and then I want to just briefly discuss moving into Bayern as well. John, it's great to have the 3 points. I can't completely say I think we deserved a full three though today. Your thoughts on if the result was fair, because I do think Hull attested for themselves very well.
Yeah, I thought saying you feel sorry for a team is always weird. If I was a neutral, for example, watching the game, you could see why someone might feel sorry for Hull, because the first goal we scored, obviously, there's the element of luck and it coming off Alexis's hand, and no, it's not handball. And I think even the Hull fans, if they looked at it objectively, would say, no, it's not handball, but just one of those awkward ones. It's like, oh, any other day is handball, we don't concede. You know, I think Chris is right that the penalty, it was Klukas, wasn't it, who did the handball and got sent off. I really like that kid. He's like, I think they found him at university or something like that. He was playing at football. He's only like 19. He's like one of those old school like players you see from the 60s where he runs around on the ball. But anyway, like I think the keeper would have actually got a hand to that header from Perez. So I'm not sure he necessarily did that. But I don't think Hull really made enough chances. They had, what, the one good shot that Cech pulled off a pretty good save, and the header at the start of the game.
Yeah.
That he saved as well. So other than that, I'm not sure. I think they gave the ball away too much at the back. We were certainly guilty of wasting our chances, because we could have had a lot more goals today if everyone was like really sharp on it. So, you know, we certainly didn't play to our best. But I think the amount of chances that Hull gave up, then, yeah, I felt the 3 points was fine. 2-0 scoreline. On the way we played, maybe it should have just been one. I don't know. I think it's one of those ones where even if it was 4-0 today, I'm not sure everyone would have been like jumping about cheering. It was just get 3 points. That was all that was important. Just get a win and try and get a bit of confidence in the team. So, you know, it's that I'll take, and it's trying to get some confidence before the Bayern Munich game, because obviously you want to go into that. I don't think anyone's expecting us to come out over two legs other than Chris, apparently, winning the tie over the two legs. But if you go out and you perform well in both legs and we go out, I don't have a problem with that. I never have a problem with Arsenal losing if we play well. I'm not happy that we've lost the game, obviously, but if you go out and you actually put something on the pitch and you put in a good performance and the other team is better than you, then that's fine. Then, you know, you've done everything you possibly can. That's I'll take it. I'm not happy that we lose a game, but that's what all you can expect from the team. So hopefully this gets him in the right mindset for Bayern on Tuesday.
I will just say, if you enjoy good goals, go check out the Chicharito's second for Leverkusen, because it was a magnificent volley that he just scored to put them up 2-0 over Frankfurt. Sorry. Let's talk about Bayern, unless Chris, you have anything to add on today and
No,
carry 3 points. Let's discuss this. So Wenger will be back on the touchline. Xhaka is again available for selection. I don't think we'll necessarily win over two legs against Bayern. I think this is the most beatable Bayern team we've ever played. I think it's there for the taking if we can put in two good performances, and if we can shield our back four. That being said, we finally have some options to pick in the center of the midfield. Elneny's back. You'll have Xhaka. Obviously. Coquelin's still available, while I'm not quite sure I feel quite comfortable with him there anymore. And then you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain, who Chris stated before is on some really good form and playing very well at the time. Real quick on this, Chris, who would your starting center mid partnership be? Would you plug in Xhaka or Elneny and keep Ox, or would you completely change those two in front of the back four right now?
I'm really torn on this one. Because I personally think, although I haven't been sort of blown away by Big Granit this season, I think he's going back to Germany. He'll want to make an impression. He knows the opposition well. I would be playing him in this game, and I think it's the sort of game that will actually help him, and probably will be a useful game to play. As John will know, his style is very much suited to teams how Bayern play. If you watched him at Gladbach last year, so I would still be having that reservation about the temperament. But to be honest, I'm going to have that whether it's against bloody Torquay or Bayern. So, you know. The question is, who do you partner him with? Do you go sensible and, you know, go with a Coquelin or an Elneny and sort of hope that you can just stop the flow coming through? Or do you go balls out and put Ox, who's clearly a more offensive player? I have to say, I think I'm slightly leaning towards playing the Ox. Slightly. Yes, it's a really hard one. I think the other thing as well, with Coquelin's knock today, obviously, we don't know how serious or not that is. I know he played on, but these things tend to stiffen up the day afterwards, said the vicar to the schoolboy. So, you know, I have to say, if I put my head on the block right now, if we weren't going to change our system, which I don't think we will, I'd probably go with Xhaka and Ox. That said, I think it will probably end up being Coquelin and Ox again, because I don't think Arsenal will throw Xhaka in, having had no playing time of recent weeks. So, yeah, it's a very tough one. If I actually had my way, I'd play a three-man midfield. I'd play Coquelin in front of the back four and Ox and Xhaka in front of those two, and I'd restrict the forward line a bit more, but that's just me. So, yeah, I think we'll end up seeing Ox and Coquelin, to be honest.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. John, your thoughts on that? Would you change up what Chris has? Would you go with three, or would you stick with our system?
There was a couple of questions about that actually, so we'll shout them out as we go along. Yeah. People who ask similar questions, but if I had a choice, I'd put three men in the midfield. I wouldn't have Coquelin as one of those men in the midfield, which I know would surprise some people. If you're going to play Mezut in this game, sorry, Mezut, you're going to have to play wide if you're in the team. I don't think you can afford to play him at number 10 because I don't think he does enough there because he doesn't help the midfield enough. So that would have to be his responsibility, whether he plays on the right or the left, I assume on the right-hand side. And if it was a midfield three for me, I would actually have Xhaka and Elneny and Oxlade-Chamberlain as my midfield three. There's enough legs in there. They can all get back and defend. They're all passing good enough on the ball. Because it's not just about us sitting deep and defending against Bayern and holding them off. There's going to have to be periods where you need to be able to good enough to keep the ball and pass it around and be comfortable in possession. And I like Coquelin. I think defensively, he's not been great this season. I think in part of that has been down to the fact he's been playing so high up the pitch. But I don't think on the ball he's good enough in this game. However, I suspect it will just be a two-man midfield. And I agree with Chris. I think it will probably be Coquelin and the Ox in midfield. So, yeah, not what I'd want. I suspect also Arsene sometimes. I don't know how he's taken the Xhaka red card, the second booking. I think he was fair with him and lenient, and probably agreed with most of us that the first red card he got this season wasn't a red card, but they didn't appeal it because of his reputation he had when he came to the club from what he'd done the previous season at Gladbach. But I think the second one, sometimes Arsenal, when a player gets sent off and they know they've got that reputation hanging around them and that referees are looking to book them, he has a tendency to punish them in not necessarily talking to them very much or sometimes not picking them in games. So I'm wondering whether Xhaka might receive some punishment and not be picked for the buying game, which would be a huge loss, I think, because I think he brings a lot to our team. And whilst he hasn't got a great record against Bayern Munich, he does know that a lot of the players there, and he's obviously played in Germany for a long time, so he knows what to expect. So I think he'd be an asset for the team. But yeah, I think like Chris, I think it will be Cock and Ox.
Let's hope not. Okay. So that pretty much answers Mr. Bob Lexdow, answers his question there. Joe Madeira, John, this one's for you, since you watch a lot of Bundesliga. How do you think, this is from Joe Madeira, 1993. How do you think Bayern is going to line up against us? You know, what, as somebody who watches Bundesliga sort of week in and week out, what's their best system, and how do they take on the bigger teams that are going to try to attack probably like we will?
They've been playing, you know, 4-3-3 at times. It's quite fluid. It's obviously Lewandowski up top. Robin's come back into his best form, playing on the right-hand side as he does, and doing the thing that Arjen Robben always does, cutting in on his left foot and scoring goals. I still don't know. He must have amazing speed, because just every time you just see him get the ball and you think, I know he's going to go on his left side, so just show him down the right. Nope, just let him go on his left foot. Every team does it. I don't understand. You know, he's obviously a very good footballer, but yeah, it always confuses me. Ribery's been playing a lot more lately on the left. Douglas Costa, weirdly, hasn't been playing as much, which... for me, anyway, is a good thing, because I think he's a fantastic player. But for some reason, he's not getting on particularly with Carlo there, and there's rumours of him wanting to leave, apparently.
I have sources that say that we're in for him in the summer.
I'd love a Douglas Costa. That would be amazing.
That's the one player you guys have talked to me about this before. You know, that's the one player from across Europe he's top of my list right now, so I would definitely take it. But they are a beatable team though right now.
Yeah,
they're showing some weakness under Ancelotti.
They're not in the greatest form in the league. They are still winning. They're still top of the league. They're still getting results, but the fans aren't very happy with the way they're playing. It's obviously the intensity is not the same as Pep's gone now, and Carlo's a bit more relaxed. He's more of a man manager. You know, the board aren't particularly happy, apparently, with things and the way they're going there. So there's kind of they're struggling a little bit to score goals, which is very strange to say for a Bayern Munich side with the players they've got. And I think at the moment they're currently 0-0, are they, Chris, with, is it Ingolstadt?
Yeah, 0-0 with Ingolstadt. And to be perfectly honest, they've been pretty poor.
Yeah. So, I mean, expect them to probably lose to Ingolstadt today and then batter us 5-0 on Tuesday or something like that and finally have a turnaround form. But... they haven't been in great form, so it's not necessarily the worst time in the world to play them. Obviously, they've got quality players, and if they turn it on, it's going to be a very, very difficult game. They've got wonderful midfielders like Thiago Alcantara, for example, is a great midfielder. They've got there, you know, they've got Arturo Vidal. The list of players they've got is ridiculous. They've got Manuel Neuer in goal, who actually maybe has been a little bit off form this season, but still a very good goalkeeper. So I think the chance is there. The worry for me is we've got good enough players to beat them. I don't doubt that at all. It's whether the players believe they can go and do it, I think, is the thing. I think it's all a mental thing at the moment.
I can tell you all, by the way, as well, that Bayern Munich have gone with a full-strength lineup today, which is interesting. Neuer, Martinez, Alaba, Hummels, Lahm, Alcantara, Vidal, Kimmich, Muller, Alonso, Lewandowski, and they've just brought on Arjen Robben, and Douglas Costa's come off the bench as well. So they've gone with a full-strength lineup. They've had one shot on target. Dortmund are losing to Darmstadt as well, so it must be something weird in the water over there today. But they haven't really been great. They've had 9 shots off target, but they've struggled and toiled against a side that has just been well organised, really. There is 17 minutes to go, but I think we'll beat them. I said it on the podcast. I stand by it. I think we'll do them over 2 legs. I think we'll win in Germany. So there you go. You had it at first.
I Definitely, I definitely like our chances. I think we'll get a draw in Germany. I think we can definitely beat them at home. So I still, it's just, it's Bayern. It's you know, I find it hard to have Chris's optimism, but I think if it can
be done,
I don't think anyone's got his optimism.
If it can be done, it will be this season. So I do like our chances more so than ever. Marble Halls TV asks, should Wenger play 4-1-4-1 with an Ox and Xhaka could fit in? I'll take that myself. He won't. So there's that. Let's go to K-Man 2009 asks, do you feel Bellerin is developing under Wenger? He said he personally would like to see the Bellerin of 2014-15. Chris, Mr. Optimism. What are your thoughts on Abel? I think he has plateaued, but I still think he's playing very, very well for us. He's had some time off with injury that's sort of maybe stunted his actual development, but I don't think he's putting in poor performances for us.
I don't worry about Hector as far as a footballer goes, because he's obviously one of the better fullbacks in Europe. I think he'd be one of those that most teams would try and sign. Obviously, the world's greatest manager, Pep Guardiola, tried to sign him last summer.
He's got to sling the handbag every time.
Well, I have to, John. It's part of my gimmick. It's like some wrestlers come out with a steel chair, some come out with a barbed wire bat, I come out with a handbag. It's great. I think Hector will be fine. What I would say, and I can see Steve in a corner of Poland going, yeah, mm-hmm. I do worry about the coaching at Arsenal when it comes to the defensive side of things. And obviously we've mentioned the goalkeeping coaching side of things. I do wonder how much coaching Hector Bellerin gets as a defender. I get
none. Sorry.
That's my worry. No, that's exactly my worry. I do. Sometimes when he goes into challenges, he does tend to be a little bit rash. And that comes of a player who, yes, there's youthful exuberance. But I've seen Nacho go to ground when he shouldn't. And he's not inexperienced. You know, I've seen Kieran Gibbs go to ground and he's not inexperienced. So I do worry about the future of our fullbacks coming through. Are they actually going to be taught just to bomb forward and get crosses in? Or are they actually going to be taught, yeah, your first job as a defender. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Your first job as a defender is to tackle, is to defend. That is your first job. You know, Lee Dixon and Nigel Winterburn, their first and best qualities were defending. They were also pretty handy at going forward and crossing the ball, but their main thing, thank you, John, was their, you know, their defending. So, yeah, I think it's clear that, you know, whatever you think of Arsene, defending and coaching defence is not something he enjoys, nor is it something he particularly wants to do. Pick that apart all you like, but it's true. It's not the sort of thing he enjoys. He enjoys coaching offensively. So I don't worry about Hector too much, but I wouldn't be against him getting a few extra sessions from a Martin Keown, for example, of how to put some twat up in the air once in a while.
I think it's all down to his defensive development, which we don't tend to do with this club. For some reason. So next one for you, John, is going to be from our good friend Jimmy. Mr. NN Gooner asks, is Ox now to be considered a central midfielder, or is he a winger playing in central midfield? What do you think? How do you think probably Wenger sees his role? Is he a stopgap in the central midfield? Because I know in the past he says that he thinks his future is in central midfield, but he's only played there out of necessity for us and he's not established a spot ahead of anybody in that position yet.
I think obviously the main reason why he started there is because of the lack of bodies we've got there at the moment with the injuries we've had and the Xhaka suspension. But he's always said, well, not always, sorry. He's more recently said that it's a position he wants to play. I think his dad's spoken about it as well, who was obviously an ex-pro and was a decent footballer. And everything I've seen of him, and it's only a few games to be fair, it's against differing levels of opposition as well. But I think he's done well. I think he was our one player who can come out from the Chelsea game with his head held in any sort of, you know, sort of respectable fashion. I thought he was decent in that. You know, he wasn't helped much in midfield or by the teammates around him, but did the best he could. He was very good today. He shows that he can get back, he can win a tackle. That's obviously the defensive side of this game is something he needs to work more on, but that's natural because he hasn't really done a lot of that in his career. But I think he looks like he's got the appetite to do it. He's certainly got the engine to do it. He wins the ball and he can drag you up the pitch, which, you know, you need sometimes a midfielder to be able to do that. He can hold on to the ball. He's got the footwork to get out of tight situations. And he looks like he's got the range of passing as well. Again, it's a new position to him. There was a few overhit passes today. There was a couple of times where he didn't track his man and sort of didn't tweak the danger quick enough. But it comes with learning the position and being aware of it. But I think they're all things he can taught how to play that position. It's whether you've got the ability to do it. And I think he's got all the attributes to do it. So for me, I think he is a central midfielder. He's just not ever been used there or been taught the role enough. So I hope he continues to play there. I think at some point, the formation of the team will evolve. If Mesut Ozil, for example, were to leave, then I think Oxlade-Chamberlain would really thrive in a three-man midfield more than a two, to be honest. But he's shown he can do very well in a two, so I hope he keeps getting played there. It's nice to have the flexibility that you can play him wide if you need to, because obviously he's got great pace and he can beat a man. But I just think he's better in the middle, you know, driving forward with the ball. You know, we've seen he's got a decent shot on him, and if he can develop a bit more of that awareness in his game for that central midfield, you just sort of got to have your head on a pivot. Then, you know, when he gets that down, I think he'd be a very good player there.
And we saw him sort of shifted out wide whenever Elneny came on today, which, you know, it's good to have that. I think that also playing in central midfield does give him a little bit of a more defensive mind when he is on the wing as well, which is always good to help provide cover for the fullbacks. I'm going to take this next one from our good friend Lazy Python. Hello, Mr. Python. Should we be looking to buy a left back in the summer? Ricardo Rodriguez types. I don't want to get Ricardo Rodriguez types. I just want us to get Ricardo Rodriguez. And I'm pretty sure both of the gentlemen on here will back me up that he would be a very good person to bring in, but that it's going to take probably a decent amount of money because there are some big clubs as well looking at him from Wolfsburg. But no, I definitely think we should be looking at him. Chris, I want to who would be another person at left back that we could be looking at? Obviously, a lot of people are big fans of Ricardo Rodriguez at Wolfsburg, but who's somebody else that maybe isn't as much on the radar but could still get the job done for us?
As far as on the radar goes, that's a little bit more tricky because, I mean, you could pull out 1,000 left backs. Jose Gaya is one that's been mentioned at Valencia. But I can give you a little bit of a scoop, if you like. I don't know if it's a scoop. Sounds all ITK, doesn't it? We are heavily scouting Jibril Sidibe at Monaco at the moment. And I find that hilarious because we tried to sign him last summer and he didn't want to join us because he didn't think he'd get games. Since then, he's gone on to be one of the best fullbacks in Europe this season. Probably a bit of a surprise to everyone because he was a very competent fullback at Lille, but he wasn't ever, you know, a ground puller-upper, if you will. Yeah, he's come on leaps and bounds at Monaco this season. He's exactly the sort of fullback that Arsenal would be interested in. You know, athletic, strong, decent on both feet, a good crosser. He's very much like Bellerin, basically, on the other side. And, of course, he's French. So that would be a bonus as far as Arsenal goes. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, there aren't too many. And this is the problem you're going to get, you know, when you're trying to buy a player you know, who is not potentially available, quote unquote. You know, you have to pay over the odds to get them. And I do worry. I don't really want a stopgap. Nacho is getting on. That's just a fact, unfortunately. I don't like admitting it any more than anybody else does, but he is getting on. He's not going to go on forever. And I don't think Kieran Gibbs is quite good enough. I do wonder if we might possibly revisit the idea of someone like Levan Kazawa, who's at PSG at the moment. He's not playing every week. He's behind Maxwell, who's 107. Yeah, I do wonder if we might go down that road, or could we even go sort of full hipster and pull out someone like Ben Chilwell from Leicester, who we were linked with a year or so ago, who's been pretty decent in the team recently. So, yeah, I do think it's an area we need to strengthen. Obviously, Ricky Rodriguez is my choice as well. You know, I think he's exceptional. Yeah. And the thing with Rodriguez as well is he can play two different positions. You know, he's Monreal and Gibbs rolled into one. He can play left midfield or left back. So he's multifunctional, which we know Arsene likes.
He's also played some center back at times this year for Wolfsburg and represented himself well there. So
he's a big physical presence, isn't he? As well, he's not your slight fullback. No. So, you know, I he'd be the one. I do worry that a certain club in Manchester who wear blue might be ahead of us in that queue. But he will leave Wolfsburg. That is without doubt. I think PSG have sniffed as well, which is another reason why Kazawa might be on the market. But
there's also some links to him with and John will be happy with this, Inter as well, or heavily linked. So
Inter need fullbacks. Trust me.
So let's go. As we start to sort of wrap up shot here, or shop, I will say, two quick questions. Mr. Bob Lex asks, why aren't we doing the frontline press anymore? I'll sort of take that. I think we are. It's just not very effective because we're only doing it one man at a time. And when you press, you do need to press with more than one man. Simple as that. Another one, I'm going to give this just briefly from each of you, though. Saker Shrestha, hopefully I got that correctly and didn't Danny that. Will Czech still be in goal next season? John, we'll start with you on that one.
Ooh, that is a good question. I think he'll still be at the club, yeah.
That wasn't the question. Well. That wasn't the question. Will he goal for us? Do you think this will be his last year as a starter? Yeah, I'm gonna hold your feet over the fire on this one.
Okay.
Is this his last year is a regular number one?
Yes. I want to say it depends on if Arsene is still the manager next season.
Okay.
I think if Arsene stays, then it's likely that Czech is still number one. If you're asking me, would I bring in a different goalkeeper? I would, if it was me, not everyone will agree, but I would bring back Crazy Woj.
Oh, you've just stolen exactly what I was going to ask you.
I'd bring back Chesney, I would bring back Mr. Chesney because he's having a wonderful time at Roma. He's probably the best goalkeeper in Serie A right now. Which is an amazing thing to say when, you know, you've got Gigi Buffon and you've got the young kid Donnarumma and Mattia Perrin, who got a bad injury, so he's missed half the season. But Chesney's having a great
time.
Don't
forget Joe Hart's in Italy.
Joe Hart is actually having a very good time in Turin as well for Torino. So, you know,
that was a joke. Let's not buy Joe Hart.
I like Joe Hart.
Let's not buy Joe Hart.
I don't think there's a
Joe
Hart or Chesney.
I don't need him pouring shots mouth to mouth with Jack Wilshere in a pool. All right, that's something I want to become a regular.
Bring back the band. I hope we bring back Chesney, but I don't think he wants to work under a certain goalkeeping coach that we have at Arsenal. So it's unlikely.
Can we
just buy Alex Lacazette instead? I don't care about goalkeepers because he scored again today and he wants to leave. So can we just sort that out? Because I'm getting annoyed that we don't do it every summer.
See, this is why I love Jimmy and Nguna. Bring him home. He knows what I feel about Chesney. He gets it.
He does.
All right, let's one last question here, and then we'll get final thoughts. Again, if you like what we do here, give us a thumbs up. Go to iTunes and give us a rating there. We appreciate you guys tuning in and week out, and a majority of you guys are here win, lose, or draw. So we really appreciate you guys listening, because if not, it would just be three cunts sitting around a computer doing this by ourselves. But you guys give us the pleasure to do it in front of you, so we definitely appreciate that. Chris, last question here from True Gruner. Did Chris dye his hair? Highlights? Has he started using lemons in the shower there, buddy? I'll let you go ahead with that. It does look particularly light today. Have you gone with the Kim Kardashian and gone with try to go with some highlights there?
No, it is just the old highlights. It's just that the light is on it, maybe. That's all. I should say I have to give it.
I don't believe you. Highlight conspiracy. I'm starting it right now. You're not telling the truth. There's got to be
facts.
Alternate facts. Yeah. No, I can confirm this is the last lot of highlights I had. There's no lemon involved. I have to give a very quick shout. Well, this kind of two shout outs, but one of them is just from somebody who tweeted me something which is absolutely brilliant. Stephen Edwards in the chat has just tweeted me a picture of a book, which is simply entitled Sodomy and the Pirate Tradition, English Sea Rovers in the 17th Century. Absolutely superb.
I was actually going to give him a shout as well. So he's been very complimentary. He's been very complimentary of my my newfound hosting skills, and I definitely appreciate it. But the book was top quality on that tweet. So
it was. And the only other quick shout, and I will pass the reins back to you again. We don't often cross contaminate on this podcast, if you will. We don't tend to shout out too many others, but when they're good, we do, because we're nice. You know, we're not assholes. We don't throw people under the bus and slag off their stuff. I know we've said this a few times on this pod, but Arsecast this week. Bayern Munich have just got a late winner, Vidal. Huh, you knew it was coming, didn't you? Andrew on Arsecast this week interviewed Hugh Wizzy. He got to meet Robert Pirès the next day, but he did an interview with Hugh Wizzy. Now, I know Hugh is not everyone's cup of tea. I know that because he does YouTube and he's popular, therefore he must be a cunt. That's how the world works, isn't it, apparently? But I thought he spoke really, really well about the fans, and he made a brilliant point.
I've never seen any of Hugh's stuff, I'll freely admit, but I heard him. It's the first time I've ever heard him speak, and he was really, really good.
I've seen a few bits of his stuff, but not consistently. And the point he made about, I won't ruin it, I'll get you to listen yourselves, but the point he made about the fans and about people loving bad news, or, you know, people, basically people that talk sense are not popular. I'll leave it with that. But please do give it a listen. It was a really good interview. And as I say, when things are worth promoting that are, you know, in the same stratosphere as us, we will give them a shout. So there you go.
And it's one of those things, fear-mongering and mob mentality always went out, sadly, over reason and well-thought-out debate. John, I'll come to you for your last sort of final thoughts on today's game and Bayern and the fans and anything else you have that you want to plug.
No, just, glad to get the 3 points. I'm sadistically, sadomasochistically looking forward to the Bayern game, I guess. Champions League for me, the group stage is always a bit dull. You know, it's not 2-0, the most exciting.
Robin.
You knew he'd do it. Left foot, yeah.
He just seemed to thought.
But you know, it's when you get to the knockout stage, you get to see some really good games and really good teams. So I'm excited for Tuesday. Hope we can get a result. If we can get a goal away, you know, it gives us a good chance. As I said before, I think they're not in the best form right now, so. I know haven't been playing great either, but it's the best time we could possibly get to play them. And you never know, you know, they could turn up on Tuesday night. I'm not going to hold my breath, but I'm hopeful. So glad we got the 3 points today and just move on to the next one and try and finish out the season on a high. You know, we're still in the FA Cup. We're still in the Champions League as it stands right now. I think everyone agrees, you know, the league is gone. So if we can finish second in the league and, you know, get another FA Cup and see how far we can go in the Champions League, we can still have a decent season. So try and go out on a high. And, you know, if this turns out to be Arsenal's last year, I really hope, you know, I'm not his biggest fan. Everyone knows that. But I really hope he can go out with a trophy and a big up yours to all the press and everyone else that have been hounding him for years and saying some really nasty things about him.
Yeah, anytime it gets personal, it's unfortunate there. So we'll end on that. We'll end on a high note. 3 points today. Only 9 behind Chelsea now. I don't even know what they're doing, and I don't really care. Let's hope for 3 points against Bayern. Check out Thursday's podcast. Again, it's great. Steve does a really good job, and of course Jeff Arsenal on there. Chris was on there. Really, really good debate and points all around. On what's been a tough time to be positive, but they definitely found some silver linings and called people out where they need to be. So check that out. I believe Drew had a blog that came out on Tuesday about players that we should have probably gone for in January and hopefully can go for maybe in the summer. So check that out as well. And I know our good friend Mr. Hollenfrund will be pushing out another blog from the magnificent group there on Tuesday again. And then yours truly will be on the podcast Thursday. Two appearances in 1 year. I don't know what's going on with me.
Pod fever.
I have started tracking who's unfollowed me and followed me now. So that way I can keep better track of you know who's hating and who's not. So I kid. But no, I'll be on there as well. I want to say I think Andrew will be on there. I think Gunnar Hollick will be on there as well. So check it out. Check us out on Thursday night. That'll come out. But yeah, thank you guys for watching again. Subscribe to us so you can get the notifications when we go live on these things, and give us a thumbs up, and we'll continue to be here week out. As Chris says, win, lose, or draw, ABW Radio, your home for Arsenal news. That's it. John, you're going to have to hit the button for me unless you just want to hear me keep rambling about bullshit.
Should we keep him coming? No.
But yeah, cheers to everybody. And yeah, y'all have a good week. And we'll see you after the Bayern Munich game on Wednesday. Mm-hmm.